Hey, it's Liz. You're listening to Noise Theory on WRCT Pittsburgh. That one was Lateralis by Tool, and before that was Venus as a Boy by Bjork. Here's another one by Tool. This is called Schism.
Could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a once over.
One of the incredible things that has happened in the context of the Russian invasion of Ukraine is that much of the world has become united against Russia and in defense of Ukraine. You look at the list of countries now sending military support, weapon support, rather, to Ukraine. It's an incredible list. And with some rare exceptions, I mean, you know, Belarus and, you know, the typical handful of exceptions, much of the world has not been as united for or against anything as we have seen over the last week. And as I've said before, the Ukrainian president, Zelensky, was not particularly popular before this started. And there are still all sorts of concerns when it comes to corruption in Ukraine, as we've talked about before. But the degree to which he has become, quite, you know, often I say as a joke, defiant and principled, but he has remained defiant and principled in a way that people the world over are really rallying behind. And most recently, with a quite frankly, a viral speech to European Parliament, during which you'll hear the translator become audibly emotional, leading to a minute-long standing ovation after the second clip. Let's take a listen, and this is the voice of the translator that you will hear.
We are fighting just for our land and for our freedom, despite the fact that all large cities of our country are now blocked. Nobody is going to enter and intervene with our freedom and country. And believe you me, every square of today, no matter what it's called, it's going to be called, as today, Freedom Square in every city of our country. Nobody's going to break us. We're strong. We're Ukrainians.
And of course, the hope would be that indeed Ukraine will be able to repel the invasion from Russia. We don't know that yet. And if it doesn't happen, it will not be from lack of desire or resolve. It will be because of the sheer size of the Russian military. And the most recent reports are that Kharkiv is increasingly surrounded, and, you know, it's so hard to know what is really going on, because many of the reports that have come out later are retracted or were based on confused or incorrect information. But the desire is there. And here is more from the Ukrainian President Zelensky ending his speech before European Parliament to a minute long standing ovation.
So do prove that you are with us. Do prove that you will not let us go. Do prove that you indeed are Europeans. And then life will win over death, and light will win over darkness. Glory be to Ukraine.
Thank you.
So as you can tell, quite a united planet at this point in time. And there are, as always, conflicting reports coming out of Russia. On the one hand, when it comes to the military front, like I just said, reports that Kharkiv is in an increasingly precarious situation as of the last 3-4 hours, surrounded, and that things are not looking good. At the same time, there are multiple reports that Putin's grip, so to speak, on power may be starting to slip, at least ideologically. Yahoo News Daily Beast article, rather, the Russian people may be starting to think Putin is insane. And I encourage you, I mean, listen, I encourage people to read all of the things that are being written and understand that what really happened, if we will ever fully know the story, it's only going to be in retrospect. But we will, of course, continue covering what is going on and hope that indeed Ukrainian forces and allies are going to be able to repel this horrifying invasion. And we will continue talking about what the next steps may be. And quite frankly, Joe Biden's State of the Union address tonight, which we'll be covering live, may give us some of that information. In the meantime, there's much more to talk about here. And I want to talk next about an incredible statement made by the Ukrainian ambassador to the United Nations. For me, joking about suicide is not something that I do on the show. And I am not someone who says, here's a list of topics you can never joke about. But on this program, we do sometimes joke about things, but I don't joke about suicide. And it makes it all the more interesting that the Ukrainian ambassador to the United Nations, Sergei Kislytsia, yesterday said in a serious way, again, without joking about suicide, if Putin wants to end up dead, he should just shoot himself dead the way Hitler did in the bunker in 1945. And the point here is actually, I mean, it's not a joke. It's if for whatever reason Putin has a death wish, the desire to destroy, reckless desires, which could lead to him ending up dead, don't kill other people, just kill yourself. And that's me paraphrasing. Let's listen to Sergei Kislytsia yesterday to the United Nations.
We have been prompted to call for an emergency special session as the level of the threat to the global security has been equated to that of the Second World War. Or even higher, following Putin's order to put an alert Russian nuclear forces. What a madness. If he wants to kill himself, he doesn't need to use nuclear arsenal. He has to do what the same, what the guy in Berlin did in a bunker in May 1945.
So, of course, he's referring to Hitler taking his own life. And I think there is a point here that is a good one. If Vladimir Putin has a death wish, if he wants to blow everything up, proverbially as much as literally, and end up dead, potentially, he could just take himself out and not as many other people. I don't think this is a joke about suicide. It's not a question of encouraging suicide or any of it. The sentiment that comes through here is if you're determined to ruin your own life, why do you have to ruin so many others as well? I was watching video on Argentinian television this morning. They have correspondents on the border between Ukraine and Poland. And to see the looks of shock on people's faces as they flee Ukraine, some literally unable to speak for periods of time from the shock that they are experiencing. You don't have to ruin other people's lives if you're simply determined to ruin your own. Now, to some degree, I would bet anything I have that the topic of assassinating Putin has come up at the top levels of government. I'm not saying anyone's thinking of doing it. I'm not saying anyone plans to do it or would do it. But without a doubt, when aides are supposed to present all options to world leaders, it is impossible to imagine that they are coming forward and saying, OK, we can send weapons. We could send troops. We could look at drones. We can do this. We can do that. Here's what it would look like if we tried to assassinate Putin. It's clearly being mentioned by the people who are paid to present all options to world leaders. I don't believe it's being seriously considered. I don't believe it's going to be done, and I'm not suggesting it be done. But the point here from the Ukrainian ambassador once again is not everybody has to suffer because Putin has become a reckless tyrant. And that certainly is coming through in the desperation of the voice of the ambassador from Ukraine to the United Nations. All right. This next topic, I've really been hesitating to do it because it's completely speculative. But sometimes it becomes so hard to explain behavior in empirical ways with facts that we have that it becomes difficult to avoid speculating. So I'm going to say this super clearly. This is speculative thinking out loud based on the number of people who have written to me, you guys, and said, could Vladimir Putin be terminally ill? And could that explain his behavior, which is unhinged and seemingly reckless, as well as potentially self-destructive to himself and to Russia? Vladimir Putin seems to be making decisions that apparently can't end well for him nor for Russia. The economic damage being inflicted on Russia as a result of the sanctions in response to Putin's aggression, according to some, could damage Russia economically for decades. And what many of you are thinking from the emails I'm getting is, could some horrible illness explain it? One person wrote to me and said, Putin's face is pudgy. Could he be on steroids for some medical condition? Could that be one reason for his rambling and his increased aggression? It's very vague. It's very speculative. Another post on the subreddit, the David Pakman Show subreddit, said, is Putin terminally ill and that's why consequences don't matter to him? Speculative. Another aspect to this is the pictures of Putin sitting cartoonishly far away from people during recent meetings. Yesterday, I retweeted an image from the morning of Putin meeting with his supposedly top advisors, and he quite literally appears to be at a 50-foot long table, 50 feet away from his closest advisors. And there's many possible explanations for that. He's generally known to be a germaphobe. It could be that simple. We heard, well, he's just very careful about COVID. It could be, as we talked about on yesterday's bonus show, Putin may fear that someone within his advisors might try to kill him. And so he's keeping physical distance. I mean, it really could be anything. The other aspect of this that people have talked about is that in two videos from last week, videos which in principle were filmed days apart, Vladimir Putin is wearing the exact same suit and tie. He seems disheveled. He seemed sort of confused, leading to speculation that the videos were filmed at the same time and Putin's not really well enough to be out and filming videos regularly. Again, it is completely speculative. And what's going on here is we're all trying to come up with explanations for unexplainable behavior from Vladimir Putin. Is he simply this much of an unhinged authoritarian and he's not sick and he's just doing this anyway? Does he have a death wish? Is he such a narcissist that he thinks he won't end up hurt no matter what he does? Or, you know, at the tail end of that is he terminally ill and just trying to go out with a bang? No one hypothesis is that much crazier, that much more crazier, that much more likely. One journalist, Udo Lischkies, who's the former director of the German broadcaster ARD's studios in Moscow, also brought up the possibility that Putin could be suffering from a serious health issue, said after seeing these recent videos of Putin, he just doesn't look at all like he looked months ago. And Lischke's highlighted claims by foreign affairs specialist and academic Fiona Hill, who said Putin could potentially be ill. So that's the whole story. You all now know everything I know and everything that's being said. I'm curious to hear your thoughts, understanding that this is not a news report of Putin being sick. This is, could this be going on? Many of you seem to think it is, and you've brought it to me. And now you basically know all of the claims that I'm aware of. Let me know. Find me on Twitter at @dpakman. I'm curious to hear your thoughts. I am so thrilled that the audio podcast continues to grow. The audio podcast, even though we are not necessarily in a time where interest in political media is the highest you would expect, although we are getting closer to a midterm, our audio podcast is growing and growing and growing. And I want to welcome everybody listening who listens daily to the 1 hour audio podcast, of course, available for free. We are a viewer and listener supported program, and I would love for you to sign up on our website, joinpakman.com. You do get a commercial free version of that podcast or a video version if you prefer, as well as access to our daily bonus show as a member. you can sign up at joinpacman.com. I want to talk today about one tool used by reactionaries to fool people and to goad people into reactionary beliefs, and that is the use of the fake or imaginary slippery slope. In general, reactionaries use fear as a tool. They aggrandize threats beyond what they are to make people afraid, and then they use that fear to try to get people to support certain policies. If you're really afraid of brown people from Mexico coming to commit crimes and take your jobs, you're likely to support extreme policies on immigration. So the use of fear and fear-mongering by reactionaries is very common. One example of the false slippery slope, and a slippery slope is saying, well, if we do A, it's definitively going to lead to B, C, D, E, F, et cetera, when sometimes A will just be A. And a great example we have because of the pandemic is the fake slippery slope of vaccine mandates. As you may know, for over a year now, the reactionary right has been saying the first thing is you got to get a COVID vaccine. And the next thing you know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And we now have over 200 years of history to tell us that vaccine mandates don't lend themselves to more authoritarianism. And you just look at the history. In 1777, George Washington required the smallpox vaccine for all soldiers. And then, you know, 30 years went by. And in 1809, Massachusetts put in its first vaccine mandate. And then another 40 years went by. And then in 1855, Massachusetts instituted vaccine requirements for schools. And then in 1905, in the U.S. Supreme Court case Jacobson v. Massachusetts, the Supreme Court said, now municipalities can put in a vaccine mandate. And people are saying this is the start of what? And it just never went further. In 1977, we had the Childhood Immunization Initiative start, and it's just about getting kids vaccinated. And more recently, people with the COVID vaccine saying this is the start of a dystopian authoritarian. No. And in fact, many places have already removed vaccine mandates for travel. Employers are removing vaccine mandates as the pandemic wanes. And so it's an obviously false slippery slope. The vaccine mandates over the last 200 years have not led to anything more than that. You can really tell the difference in how the right uses slippery slopes and fear mongering by thinking about something like healthcare. I mean, let's just think it through. We on the left say about healthcare, listen, the right wants this like total for-profit free market healthcare thing. They, generally speaking, want to let insurance companies charge whatever they want to people with pre-existing conditions, deny them insurance. And if the right got its way, we would continue to see medical bankruptcies, which we're already seeing. We would continue to see people unable to afford or access care, which we already see. All of this stuff exists right now. Okay, there's no crazy fear mongering from the left on health insurance. The right says if the left gets its way, it's the start of a communist takeover of healthcare where government bureaucrats will create death panels and decide whether you live or die. And it will be the start of a government takeover of every industry. What? So you see how one side does the slippery slope reactionary fear mongering. And we say we're going to continue seeing the same problems if we don't fix this. Very different language that's used. So the best thing when you start hearing these slippery slope claims, if you do this, it's going to lead to all this other stuff. First of all, ask for examples of when that has happened. That's one tool that you can use. Secondly, ask the person claiming the slippery slope will happen to explain exactly how. Because if you actually say to people, well, hold on, how will a vaccine mandate on COVID vaccines lead to whatever it is you're afraid of? Like, exactly what are the steps and who will enact it? And it's also a good tool to show the disconnect between the different pieces of the slippery slope. Often they won't even explain the path down the slope. When they do, it often makes no sense whatsoever. So those are some tools that you can use. But whenever you're presented with a slippery slope, ask yourselves those questions. Is there historical evidence that that's what would actually happen? How would it happen? And does that actually make any sense? One of the really interesting things we're seeing over the last week has been this reversal from much of the Republican Party about the Ukraine-Russia situation. And early, you saw a bunch of right wingers, including Trump, Tucker Carlson, Tulsi Gabbard, who claims to be on the left, but we know she's not, sort of defend Vladimir Putin. And that did not go super well. A lot of Republicans just weren't buying it because it's completely implausible that we should be supporting Vladimir Putin. So now they're sort of switching to supporting Ukraine. And one aspect of this is that now many people who have been against NATO for a while are switching to talk about how great NATO is. And the sort of most notable bullet point about this is that Donald Trump is now taking credit for NATO's existence, even though for much of his presidency, he wanted to end NATO and get the U.S. out of it and just completely take it apart. Rolling Stone's Peter Wade has a good piece of this called "Trump, Who Wanted to Withdraw the U.S. from NATO, Now Claims Credit for Its Existence." There would be no NATO if I didn't act strongly and swiftly, the former president said. He put out this statement, or, you know, it was put out from by his relatively new spokeswoman, Liz Harrington. He put this out yesterday, and the statement reads, "I hope everyone is able to remember that it was me." I mean, it's literally like a little kid. "It was me, as president of the United States, that got delinquent NATO members to start paying their dues, which amounted to hundreds of billions of dollars. There would be no NATO if I didn't act strongly and swiftly," which is a laughable claim. NATO was very strongly in existence before Trump became president. There was no sign NATO was going away. Trump adding also, I mean, Trump did everything good, I guess, guys. "Also, it was me that got Ukraine the very effective anti-tank buster javelins when the previous administration was sending blankets. Let history so note." Now, of course, revisionist history is not unusual when it comes to Donald Trump. And you need only go back to an article, I mean, in this case, from January of 2019 from Vanity Fair by Eric Lutz, which reported that Donald Trump privately discussed destroying the NATO alliance. The president repeatedly told aides that he wanted to withdraw the United States from the alliance, the New York Times reports. Trump has long criticized NATO, frequently bellyaching that the military partnership has been unfair to the U.S. and on and on and on. However, it appears Trump's attacks on NATO are more than bluster. Citing senior administration officials, the New York Times reported late Monday, again, this is January 2019, that at several points in 2018, Trump discussed withdrawing the U.S. from the international organization, a move that would effectively doom the 29 nation alliance and empower Russia, which has spent years seeking to weaken it. So understand the absurdity of this. Trump now is taking credit for NATO because NATO is so involved in supporting Ukraine against Russia. What Trump actually was threatening to do and thinking about doing during his presidency was pulling out of NATO altogether, which would have crippled it. And of course, his people will praise the flip-flop as the absolute truth and say everybody else is brainwashed if you don't accept Trump's lies. Now, remember that this is a common thing that Donald Trump does. He told people originally that the vaccine is something he created and gets credit for it. And of course, that's not true. Then he played coy with anti-vax, talking about freedom and all these different things. And then his supporters didn't get the vaccine. And then he flipped again and says, "Well, I get credit for it." And his supporters, they do both. They see, or maybe they don't accept, the absurd contrast and contradiction in Trump's claims about vaccines. And yet they don't care. They still support the guy. And it's very similar when it comes to NATO. And it's really important to understand the degree to which this guy is a liar. And so are his followers. Not only did Trump constantly attack NATO, which aligns him with Putin. Remember, Putin's one of the big antagonists of NATO. And when Trump was president, he aligned himself with the antagonists of NATO. Remember that Trump also froze U.S. aid to Ukraine. I mean, remember the entire Ukraine thing, the impeachment and everything? Trump wanted dirt on Biden from Ukraine. And he initially said, "We're not giving them the aid until they get me the dirt." Now, eventually, pressure became so great that Trump did have to release that military aid. And now he wants us to believe he's always been the big defender of NATO. And it's actually thanks to him that NATO even exists. We all see through it. But unfortunately, many of his followers don't. And that's what I want to talk about next. There was a new CPAC straw poll done this weekend at CPAC. And although Donald Trump is still leading the 2024 presidential straw poll, Ron DeSantis is polling higher than ever before, 28%. And Trump is furious. So we want to kind of consider this story in the right context. Trump is still winning the straw poll, but the margin by which he is winning it for the 2024 Republican primary is as small as it has ever been. The Hill reporting, Trump wins CPAC straw poll as DeSantis's support grows. Former President Trump emerged as the clear winner, but Ron DeSantis is now up to 28%. Recall, as the article does, that in last year's straw poll, DeSantis had 21% support. In third place was Trump's former Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, with 2% support. So Trump has been furious about what's going on with DeSantis for a long time now. You might remember that in November, I reported to you Trump's ire grows as DeSantis's popularity with Republicans takes off. And at that point, DeSantis was only polling between 10 and 20 for the 2024 Republican primary, depending which poll you looked at. And what's at issue here and what Trump is so enraged by is that a number of times now when DeSantis has been asked, do you rule out running for president in general, or do you rule out running if Trump runs? And DeSantis has not ruled out either. And why would he? When you're polling 28% and it's years from the election and you haven't even really talked about running, you genuinely have a good shot at being the Republican nominee. DeSantis would be crazy if he has any even possibility of ambitions to be the Republican nominee in 2024. DeSantis would be crazy to rule it out. So, of course, he hasn't. And Trump's furious. Since then, Trump has gone at DeSantis, and DeSantis has also gone after Trump, saying things like, for example, DeSantis, I don't know that I should have aligned myself so closely with Trump early in the pandemic. Might have not been the right decision. Trump going back at DeSantis, the order doesn't matter, but going at each other, saying, you know, he's ungrateful and he didn't really even do that great of a job with the pandemic or whatever the case may be. And one great way to trigger Donald Trump is to not be 100% subservient in every single way. And Ron DeSantis, I've said before, I believe Ron DeSantis is sort of like a more dangerous version of Donald Trump in the sense that it's the same wacky right wing ism, completely disconnected from reality, facts, empiricism, etc. But DeSantis is slightly less cartoonish than Trump. He's still a cartoon. I mean, compared to, you know, old school Republicans, DeSantis is still a total cartoon, but he is more competent. He's less obviously clueless, and he might be more able to actually get things done in the sort of Trumpian vein. And that makes him a very dangerous guy. So the prospects for the country are, of course, concerning in the sense that when a governor with endless unnecessary COVID deaths is seeing his popularity take off, that should raise a red flag for all of us. At the same time, we saw 70 million people vote for the completely moronic Donald Trump, who has even more deaths than that on his hands with his sheer incompetence on the pandemic. And so it's been a serious problem for a while. I do think that one of the best possible scenarios for the left and for the Democratic Party, because the left and the Democratic Party are really not indicating to me that they have any ability to seriously win an election unless someone really helps them out. I'm hoping for help from the Republican Party for Democrats in 2022 and 2024. And one of the best things I can think of that would happen would be that Trump and DeSantis get into a really protracted primary battle. And when we're already talking about 56-28, I mean, Trump's still winning, but 56-28 this far out from 2024 signals that DeSantis really could be a very solid challenger to Trump. And I think Democrats have to hope for absolutely anything they can to help them out. What will ultimately happen, I think we won't know until after the 2022 midterms. And this is, again, why I continue telling you guys, in some way, Trump seems determined to run in 2024. Even at the CPAC speech over the weekend, Trump said in the clearest terms we've heard so far, we did it twice and we're going to do it again in November of 2024. I have not heard Trump more clearly and forcefully say I plan to run than that. At the same time, I do believe that if the Trumpian wing and Trump's endorsees get crushed in November, I think Michael Cohen is right. Remember when I spoke to Michael Cohen, Michael Cohen said he doesn't think Trump will run because Trump can't stand losing again. And of course, the question is, will Trump believe that he can win? Or will Trump come to realize that he's destined to lose? And on that basis, what will he decide? In the immediate, the best thing we can do is minimize losses in November, maximize wins if there are wins to be had, and foment this split between DeSantis and Trump, because we have very little else to be shooting for right now. I wish it were different, but that is the reality. Make sure you're following us on Instagram at David Pakman Show. After this short break, I will deliver the State of the Show address. And tonight I'll be live with Joe Biden's State of the Union address on YouTube, Twitch and Facebook. And I hope you'll join me for that. President Joe Biden is going to brief the country on the state of our union. And today I'm going to brief you about the state of the David Pakman Show. It's been an incredible year. The second year of the COVID pandemic, the first year of Joe Biden's presidency, economic uncertainty, vaccines, inflation, other calamities. 2021 was an incredibly strong year from the standpoint of the show. And I can report to you that the state of the David Pakman Show is very, very strong. Some say the best that we've seen. In 2021, we added more than 200,000 YouTube subscribers, not the most we've ever added in a year, but the most we've ever added in a non-election year. And that is now putting us within striking distance of 1.5 million YouTube subscribers. Our friends over at the Young Turks have been really the standard bearers for left-wing YouTube channels for a very long time. And I can report to you with total peace and love that in the last few months, the David Pakman Show YouTube channel is receiving more daily views than the Young Turks main channel. Friendly competition, their network is way bigger than ours. We love everybody over there. But just a reminder, with a small team, you can do some pretty amazing things. In terms of the audio podcast, monthly downloads are now at their historic peak. Our previous peak was that crazy period between the November 2020 election and the Trump riots. That was our high watermark. We are at a new high watermark now with the audio podcast, the most downloads a month in the history of the show. We've got new platforms quickly growing, nearly 100,000 followers on Instagram, nearly 100,000 followers on TikTok. We've launched YouTube Shorts content, Instagram Reels content. 2021 also saw the return of the David Pakman Show Town Hall events, hugely popular with our core audience, but the year was not without some major challenges. We received a 90-day monetization ban from Facebook after our content was wrongly flagged for spreading COVID disinformation, something we would never do. But it was a big hit to our revenue, thanks to the hard work of nearly a dozen Facebook employees who are in our audience. We were able to get that monetization ban reversed in under a month, but it's a stark reminder of how precarious these revenue sources are. More recently, we got a 24-hour ban and a community guidelines strike on TikTok due to another false positive in a segment where we criticized right-wing actor Kevin Sorbo and his opinion about healthcare. We were banned for 24 hours, and now one strike closer to a permanent ban from TikTok. And of course, we were targeted by right-wing conspiracy theorist Alex Jones, who launched a brutal attack on my appearance, on my eyes, on my face, discharged a number of salvos against our bonus show. So we are up against some major obstacles in attempting to move towards a sort of more media literate, critically thinking society. Donald Trump continues to deliver these erratic, febrile screeds on a regular basis. His followers love it. Fox News continues to spread disinformation, sometimes spending 24, even 48 hours talking about Hillary Clinton must soon be going to prison given all the crimes she supposedly committed. Just boogeymen, boogeymen of critical race theory, cancellations, Dr. Seuss. It's pervading right-wing media, and their followers fall for it. A seemingly on speed Don Jr. regularly inciting the most bottom-dwelling pond scum of the political right in these apoplectic froths over misunderstandings and distortions, and that's not going to stop. Sadly, and it is sad, even some on the left fall for the disinformation. Many so-called leftists wildly attacking me for being a supposed imperialist bastard, despite my constant refrains that I am against American intervention abroad in almost all cases. The facts do not matter to too many people. But we will not give up, and we will continue to persevere because I see the good in the independent media audience. I see it in that 15-year-old Canadian kid who recently called in, inspired so many of you with his wit and his intelligence and his curiosity. I see it in the people emailing me 20, 30, 40 times every day. Even though their emails have been filtered into the trash for months, they're still enthusiastically emailing me. I see it even in the right-wing troll callers who we know are calling constantly because they see us having an impact. That's why they won't stop leaving me voicemails. They're worried that we're talking sense and that people are understanding it. That's the David Pakman show I know. And that's why I can confidently tell you today, the state of the show is as strong as ever. And it makes me hopeful about the future of independent media. Thank you, and God bless the United Church.
So some of you might remember that last week I said to you, jokingly, of course, when the world is complicated, when I need moral clarity, and when I really need to know what's taking place geopolitically at such difficult times, I say to myself, what is Tulsi Gabbard's opinion? Now, that was a joke, but the full joke is actually, I think, what would Tulsi Gabbard say, but what would televangelist Pat Robertson also say? And now we know. Pat Robertson, who is now 91 years old, of 700 Club fame, a Christian televangelist who has previously said that so many things are demonic. I'm going to try to go from memory here. Pat Robertson has previously said, let me think now, yoga, Harry Potter, Ouija boards, sometimes adopted children, sometimes secondhand sweaters. Man, what else? All of these different things can be demonic and have demons attached to them. So Pat Robertson seemingly coming out of retirement to explain why Russia has invaded Ukraine. And I have to tell you, I'm actually fascinated by it. I really find this type of stuff fascinating because he's completely created an imaginary world that he, I guess, believes exists with end times and messages from God and stuff about the Pharisees. Or I don't even know. I'm going to play it for you. And I wish I had. I mean, it's almost like a childlike imagination that the guy has. Check this out. It is wild. Here we go.
Putin's out of his mind. Yes, maybe so. But at the same time, he's propelled by God. He went into the Ukraine. But that,
by the way, Pat Robertson still using the term the Ukraine, which is just a signal of, you know, how long he's been commenting on these things, I guess.
Wasn't his goal. His goal was to move against Israel ultimately.
Ah.
And he'll link up with Turkey, with Azerbaijan, I mean, with across the Dardanelles in that little bridge. Mm. And they will come together. And then you look down into North Sudan, you've got a Muslim country down there, and there they all are. Persia, of course, is Iran, and there is the land that is set up in Ezekiel 38.
Right.
And you see how Ukraine is key because of the, you see the land bridge between Bulgaria, Greece, and Turkey, and all of that area is going to be mobilized against Israel in the latter days. And God says, I am going to deal with it.
Now, guys, I understand when Pat Robertson says the latter days, he's talking about a sort of apocalyptic rapture end times. When he says latter days, he means the end as he believes to have been biblically prophesied. Isn't this stuff just fascinating?
So you can look at your map, you can read your newspapers, you can listen to your news, but know of a fact that God is bringing to pass what he prophesied years ago through his servant Ezekiel.
Now, it's always tough for me to understand. Do these Christian extremist types want the end times? Because like with some of them, from what I recall, and I've interviewed some of them as well, it's just so hard to keep track of all of it. I think some of them want the end times because they believe that Jesus comes back then. And again, correct me if I'm wrong, everybody who's been good gets eternal life with Jesus or something. Like they consider the rapture to be good because the sinners are killed. But you want to usher in the end times, I think, even though like most everybody dies, which you and I might be like, well, that's bad, sir. But I think people like Pat Robertson want the end times.
And you read it in the 38th passage of Ezekiel 1-6, it's all there. And God is getting ready to do something amazing, and that will be fulfilled. Mm. And what Putin is doing by moving as he is to set up Ukraine as a staging ground for one of the armies, mm, and then across is Erdogan at Turkey, and you've got between them that little Dardanelles area. And it's going to happen. So I just say that is what's coming up. Is Putin crazy? Is he mad? Well, perhaps. But God says, I'm going to put hooks in your jaws and I'm going to draw you into this battle, whether you like it or not. And he's being compelled after the move into the Ukraine. He's being compelled to move again to get a land bridge and then across the Dardanelles with Turkey and watch what's going to happen.
Yeah. Now, as many of you will notice, Pat Robertson is not looking great, but it still sounds like the same old Pat Robertson with some of those same ideas. So that is really wild. I have to tell you, there's some weird way in which I envy people who are able to be so certain about things for which we have no evidence and just allow themselves to be completely absorbed into that. And it sort of seems like you don't have a care in the world, in the sense of, it's sort of like with the conspiracy theorists, everything's controlled, it's all predetermined, it's all planned. It's just like, it's gonna be what it is. There's something about being able to fall for that I almost envy, because it seems easier than realizing the complexity and uncertainty of the world that we live in, and that, hey, we actually have an impact here. It's not just like, well, you know, Putin, it's all ordained by God. Putin's going to do what he's going to do, and that's really it. It's been prophesied. As a practical matter, Pat Robertson's predictions aren't very good. And just as one example, here is one where he said Trump's going to win. And much like it was hard to tell whether that last clip was an endorsement of Putin or a condemnation of Putin, it's hard to tell whether this clip is an endorsement of Trump, but he was sure Trump was going to win, which he didn't, of course.
There's going to be a war. Ezekiel 38 is going to be the next thing.
By the way, isn't he talking about Ezekiel 38 in both clips?
on the line, then a time of peace, then maybe the end. But nobody knows the day or the hour when the Lord's going to come back. He said the angels don't know it.
Right.
And only the Father knows it. So I'm not saying this is the second coming, but I am saying there are things that people have thought would be during a millennial time with the coming of Jesus that are going to happen in our lifetime. And the next thing is the election that's coming up in just a few weeks.
Right.
At which time, according to what I believe the Lord told me, the
yep.
president is going to be reelected. I'm saying by all means, get out and vote for whoever you want to vote for.
Right.
But by all means, let your voice be heard. But it's going to lead to civil unrest of great proportion. Then a war against Israel and so forth and so on.
Yeah.
There's going
so,
to be a war.
You know, the Lord getting back to Israel didn't happen. Trump didn't get reelected. But that is really something. And he has been predicting end of the world stuff for a really long time. In 1982, I wasn't even alive yet. He predicted that the judgment on the world was coming very, very soon. In 2006, he said the Pacific Northwest would be devastated by a tsunami. In 2007, he said mass killings would be unleashed in America. I believe at one point he predicted an asteroid, and that didn't happen either. But okay, I mean, that it is what it is. And that's Pat Robertson's perspective. And even with the Trump thing, it's like, okay, so is it good or bad if the end times come? You can't really tell from how he says it. He's like, Trump's going to win, and then there's going to be unrest, and we're going to get closer to the end times. But do you like that or do you not like that? It's never totally clear with these guys. Here's just a sad clip. This really is sad because we've speculated that the former president, you know, the former guy, really doesn't have normal relationships with people, and that includes his own kids. Here is just another one of these little segments, and it really is sad. Eric Trump was speaking at this Reawaken America tour. And remember, Eric Trump is not generally known as the smart one. And the Reawaken America tour is this kind of like anti-COVID denying, anti-vax, religious revival type tour that goes around the country. It's the one where that so-called comedian Jim Brewer did his cockatoo impression that had so many of the people in the audience in hysterics that I didn't find very funny. But so Eric Trump spoke at one recently, and he did the really cool thing, you know, showing the alpha nature of everything. He called his dad, Trump, and he said that, you know, he really loves him. And Trump said, have a good weekend. Do you guys feel bad for Eric Trump? Really for all of Trump's kids. Take a look.
You know what, Dad? There is so much love in this room for this country and for you and everything that you accomplished. And I speak on behalf of every single person here. They love you. I love you. We're proud of you. And just hold your breath, everybody. Hold your breath.
Well, thank you very much. And everybody, enjoy yourselves and have a good weekend. And I'll be in Ohio soon. I'll see you all.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I mean, it's just so awkward. If you've been around truly narcissistic people, this is typical of them, and this is typical of how they behave. But as far as like a parenting thing is concerned, you know, your kid says, I love you, and you go, well, thank you very much and have a nice weekend. It's sad. And imagine that that's the one phone call Eric's allowed, right? I mean, we don't know how often Eric's allowed to talk to his dad. It really gives me kind of like, please love me, daddy sort of vibes. And it is sad. It really is sad. It doesn't seem as though Trump has a normal relationship with his kids. And it's all very strange, but it is what it is. And there's really not too much more that we can say about it. We have a voicemail number. That number is 2192 David P. I was going to talk to you guys today about the. So let me back up. A week ago, I imagined that today I would be talking to you about the U.S. anti-vaccine mandate trucker convoy heading to Washington, D.C., set to arrive today. Their plan was to get to D.C. on the day of Joe Biden's State of the Union address. A week ago, I thought I'd be talking to you about it. I'm not, because nobody's paying attention to it. And it's not even clear that it seems to have sort of disintegrated. And
one aspect of this is brought up in this voicemail, and our voicemail number again is 2192 David P, which is, what mandates are they protesting anyway? Take a listen.
Hi, David. Listen, I have a question for you. Have all the mandates pretty much been overturned by the courts, except for, you know, Biden's federal ones in the service and at the airports and stuff? Everything else has pretty much been overturned by the courts. Am I wrong? So why are the convoys still forming and still trying to make their way across America? Now they got bikers doing it too. And they have a much further cause. Why don't they just take up their guns and go to Ukraine? Kyle Rittenhouse to go with them too. He wanted to protect the storefront. Right. Let them protect the country with their patriotism. That Trump calls them all patriots, but they're true patriots. Let them do something patriotic. Even if it is for another country, at least it shows they got the balls.
Yeah. So listen, a couple of thoughts on the U.S. trucker convoy. First of all, and I tweeted about this yesterday, and many of you wrote back absolutely loving it and saying you had thought the same thing. Imagine that you spend a month or 6 weeks or however long it was organizing this convoy of truckers that wants to protest vaccine mandates and government tyranny and authoritarianism. And you're going to drive across the entire country. I don't remember where they started, whether it was California or Arizona, somewhere in the Southwest or maybe Texas. Who the hell even knows? They're going to drive to Washington, D.C. And then quite literally, as they're about to leave to start their convoy, Russia invades Ukraine and gets 24/7 coverage, and no one pays attention to your stupid convoy. So like, that's number one, and that's funny, and I genuinely take pleasure in it. That's hilarious. Nobody's paying attention to these people because Russia has invaded Ukraine. But then there are other layers of absurdity that are Kafkaesque in this entire thing. The second one is the whole premise of the trucker convoy is that these are victims of tyranny and authoritarianism, right? We are being victimized by the tyrannical government, mostly state governments, that say, hey, you got to be vaccinated against COVID. And quite literally, Russia invades Ukraine and people start dying. And the president of Ukraine is out there fighting. And you as a trucker are trying to say, I'm a victim of tyranny when you see what's going on in Ukraine. Beyond parody. OK, so that's like the second layer that's funny or, you know, curious. And then, of course, the third one is what the caller is saying. What mandates are you protesting? So the general Biden vaccine mandate, which, by the way, wasn't a mandate because it include or allowed for a test out option. You can opt out and test instead. That was blocked by a court. You then have states and municipalities that have various vaccine requirements. You got to be vaccinated to work in a healthcare setting, or you've got to show a vaccine card to go to a restaurant or whatever. They're mostly dropping it because why? It was an imaginary slippery slope all along. As COVID is waning for now, fortunately, and who knows what the future holds, variants, spikes, resurgence, cases are down 95%. And exactly as the sane people expected, as the threat from COVID goes down, various requirements are being eliminated. There's barely any mask requirements left. Yes, you got to wear masks on airplanes. There's some cities and places that, but the mask requirements are going away. The vaccine requirements are going, it's all going away. So what are you even protesting at this point? It's really an example. This entire U.S., the Canadian convoy was this, but the U.S. trucker convoy is even more so this. What are you protesting at this point? What on earth are you protesting? And they're just desperate for attention, which they're not getting, thankfully. Not thankfully that Russia invaded Ukraine, but thankfully as a result of there being real news in the world, nobody's paying attention to that stupid convoy. And I'm absolutely loving every minute of it. We have a fantastic bonus show for you today. First of all, what would it look like if Ukraine joined the European Union? How would it work? What would it look like? And what would be Putin's reaction? We're going to talk about Ukraine and the EU on today's bonus show. Secondly, hackers have been very involved in the Russian invasion of Ukraine, taking down a number of prominent Russian websites and doing a whole bunch of other stuff. And one of the recent things that happened is that 120,000 Russian soldiers have been doxxed by hackers, meaning that their identities and their personal information has been released. And we're going to talk about, obviously, that is not in the realm of what we typically consider cyber warfare. But where does that type of thing fit in international military conflicts? There are differing opinions. It might sound like, no. Here's the one view on doxing soldiers and its validity. But there are actually some dissenting views on that. We're going to talk about that. And then number three, yesterday I told you that FIFA has determined Russian players can play in the World Cup, but no Russian national anthem, and they can't be identified as Russia. That's been canceled. Russia has now been totally thrown out of the World Cup. FIFA has decided it's just a hard no. And we're going to talk about that and other kind of sports related sanctions that have come in the past and that may come in the future. All of those stories and more are on today's bonus show. How do you get access to the bonus show? Simple. Sign up for a membership at joinpacman.com. You can use the coupon code Please Don't War. I know it sounds ungrammatical, but that's what it is. The coupon code is Please Don't War. You'll get a discount off of a membership. You'll get access to the bonus show, the commercial-free audio feed, the commercial-free video feed, and much, much more. We will see you then and tonight live on YouTube, Twitch, and Facebook for Joe Biden's State of the Union address. I hope you'll join.
Hello, my fellow Americans. I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
RCT in sound from way out. WRCT in sound from way out.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth. The cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
And the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem. One that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Hello, my fellow Americans. I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.pittsburgh,
meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
6 days ago, Russia's Vladimir Putin sought to shake the very foundations of the free world, thinking he could make it bend to his menacing ways. But he badly miscalculated.
President Biden delivers his first State of the Union as Russia escalates its attacks on Ukraine. We'll go to Kiev for the latest, then hear from a Nigerian student about the racist treatment of Africans trying to flee Ukraine.
We started protesting and telling them they have to let us go, that this is rubbish. They're taking like 100 Ukrainians and then taking like 2 Africans. It doesn't make sense because there are more Africans there than Ukrainians at the border. So we started pushing and the police cocked their guns and pointed their guns and told us that they're going to shoot us.
Plus, we'll speak about Russia's invasion and President Biden's State of the Union with Filipino vice presidential candidate Walden Bello of Focus on the Global South and Branko Marcetic of Jacobin. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Russia has intensified its attacks on Ukraine's major cities. The governor of Kharkiv, Ukraine's second largest city, said at least 21 people were killed and over 100 wounded in a 24-hour period under heavy Russia shelling. The city's police headquarters and university were badly damaged and caught fire. Russia says it captured the southern port city of Kherson, though local officials deny the claim. Mariupol has also come under intense shelling. In the capital, Kiev, a Russian missile strike on a television tower killed 5 civilians Tuesday. The attack also hit the site of Kiev's Babiar Holocaust Memorial. The memorial commemorates the more than 33,000 Jews who were shot dead by Nazis and Nazi-led forces over a 2-day period in 1941, and the estimated 100,000 Jews, Roma, and others killed near the site between 1941 and 1943. The memorial was partially funded by one of the Russian billionaires, Mikhail Friedman. President Volodymyr Zelensky attended the 80th anniversary of Babi Yar at the memorial along with world leaders this past September. Zelensky responded to the attack today.
It is beyond humanity. This rocket strike proves that for many people in Russia, our Kyiv is absolutely foreign. They don't know a thing about our capital, about our history, but they all have orders to erase our history, erase our country, erase us all.
Ukrainian President Zelensky added in his comments, quote, "You killed Holocaust victims for the second time." The UN says some 836,000 people have fled Ukraine in the weeks since the invasion began in what, quote, looks set to become Europe's largest refugee crisis this century, unquote. Poland says more than 450,000 people have crossed its border. This is a refugee from Kyiv who fled to Romania.
In Ukraine, it's like a hell. We don't know what to do. That's why we cross to another country. So we don't know what would be tomorrow, so we're running. And my husband's staying in Ukraine because there's no possibility to cross for man who is under 60 years. So, of course, he stood in Ukraine.
On Tuesday, the UN launched a $1.7 billion aid appeal for Ukraine. We'll also hear from a black student